And our special guest tonight, Sean McNamara, we're going to continue chatting with him about the strange and unusual and take your calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. George Norrie with you, Sean McNamara with us. Sean, can psychic abilities be misused?
I think they can. Over the last few years of teaching people how to use their abilities, I've been, frankly, a little disappointed, especially from what I see online, because I had hoped that I could teach these abilities as a way of helping people become a better version of themselves. I thought
sure. The
person would be more patient, more compassionate, more open, because it's really all about our interconnectedness with each other and with our world and our universe. That time and time again, and it's not 100%, you know, I say there are a lot of good people out there, but once in a while I get messages or I'm in communication with people who are exhibiting personality disorders like narcissism, or they're just very aggressive or competitive or something else. So there is that misuse that, you know, psychic abilities are like money or energy. It's neutral. It's what you do with it. So a person can be a better person, a more loving person through using these abilities by realizing their connection to others.
Or a lousy person.
Or a lousy person. So it turns out you don't have to be a good person to be psychic. You can be pretty mean. You can be pretty aggressive. You can be pretty extreme in your views. And the psychic thing, you know, then use it in the way you want to. You can use psychic abilities to hurt others. So it's really challenging. You know, we have our consciousness, our spirit, or whatever that is, that subtle aspect, but we have our human brain, and it's got the amygdala, the emotional, the fear center. You know, it's the struggle I think we have as a species, that some part of us is designed for survival, to be very aggressive, to be very defensive. We have inherent bias. So as much as all of us want to say we're not racist or we see everyone equally, we don't, because the brain is designed to be very protective and competitive. And people ask, why don't the UFOs just come down and say hello to everyone or land on the White House lawn? I think it's because they know how aggressive and defensive and scared we can be. And when we get scared, we get pretty nasty. So there's this challenge that we could be the best version of ourselves, yet we have this physical structure, our brain, which keeps us functioning a certain way, which isn't very pretty a lot of the time.
Why aren't these abilities enhanced? Why do some people have them and some people don't, or at least show them that they have them?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, from Uri Geller's example, we know that he had contact with a non-human being, probably an ET, when he was a boy, and that opened him up. Others I know have had similar experiences. And maybe it's in the genes, too. And I know that Dean Radin from the Institute of Noetic Sciences,
right,
he and others have done studies about genetic tendencies towards being psychic. And it turns out that most people have the tendency to be psychic, but some people don't. So there might be a genetic factor there, because it does come down to how does the brain, the physical brain, how does it communicate with our non-physical aspect? And maybe there's certain genes or gene expressions that have to be turned on in order to enhance or enable that type of psychic communication.
Have you found, Sean, that some people are just outstanding at this, where other people just don't get it?
Yeah, it's interesting. When people come to my class, I can tell right away who's going to do pretty well and who's going to have a challenge. And the funny thing is, it's usually the smartest people in the room who have the hardest time.
Really?
Yeah.
They maybe overthink things?
Exactly. That's exactly right. They overthink it. They're trying to figure out how it works. And that kind of thinking is helpful afterward, that when you're trying to do something psychic, such as remote viewing.
Well, you can't think in remote viewing or it won't work.
Exactly. You got to relax.
Yeah. Just let it hit your head.
Exactly.
You know?
But the smart people, they're not used to thinking that way. Their world is based on conceptualization and logic and explanations and hard science, hard evidence, and psychic phenomena just don't fit very well with that type of thinking. But I think a person can train themselves, even if they're very smart. They think, you know, even in my classes, I know who they are. I see them struggling, and I remind them to just let go, relax, take a deep breath, and eventually they catch up, and then they can do everything everyone else can do. There are some people who are just naturally better at it. It just happens to them more often. I think often it comes down to training and intention that they want this. They want this to happen. They want to open up. And they're always looking for evidence of synchronicities in their life. They're looking for meaning, and that just strengthens their confidence and their trust that there really is something to this. Because I think belief and trust and confidence are important factors. Because if you don't believe it's possible, if you don't have confidence in yourself, if you don't think you can do this independently without someone's permission, then it's pretty much not going to happen. It might not happen the way you want it to.
All right, let's take some calls for you, Sean. Let's go next to Joe in Long Island, New York. Welcome to the program. Hi, Joe.
Yeah, Sean, I have a question, a movie example, and a comment. My question is, you were mentioning that in-between state several times. I'm wondering if you could parallel some abilities into that. And I was thinking when you guys were discussing Shirley MacLaine, Frank Sinatra, I was thinking of that movie, Some Came Running. And the college professor woman that was an object of Frank Sinatra's affections in the movie was kind of in that in-between state. She was popular with the students, but she had trouble letting go and finding a romantic partner who may or may not have been Frank Sinatra. And then Shirley MacLaine was the third woman that was kind of a disappointment to Frank Sinatra and the character in the movie. You know, she was not as into his writing. And at the very end of the movie, I thought it was a wonderful scene because even though they weren't together, you know, the professor and Frank Sinatra, the image of both of them was like a haunting image. They were both pensive and introspective, you know, in the last scene, and they did parallel that way. And then my comment is, you were talking about what one person could do in terms of maybe prayer, meditation, and it's an example of book of, in the Bible, in the book of James, it talks about Elijah being just one person and intervening that it would rain on the earth for several years in a row, and he was able to do that as just one person. And if you look back at the book of Kings in the Bible, he had his troubles as one person. He was getting chased down by an army of people and chased into the desert. So he wasn't necessarily ultra strong, but, you know, he had that prayer power as one person.
Well, we talked about the one person, the ability of one versus the many, and I still contend the right one can do what they have to do, Sean.
That's right. And, you know, who's to say if they're really working independently or maybe they've got help, either from angels or spiritual guides or even UFOs. You know, a lot of people think that some of the events in the Bible are talking about UFOs. So the element of prayer is really important because prayer is a form of communication. And so if someone is really great at praying with full faith, who knows who they're communicating with? But there's help on the other side.
Text and tweets for you, Sean. What do you have, Todd?
Well, Sean, Jerry in Tampa Bay, Florida, wants to know if a person can still learn to tap into psychic abilities in their senior years.
Absolutely. I think what a great time, because if you've got everything set up and you're retired, maybe you've got a lot more time than you had when you were working more, you've got less stress, you're more at peace with yourself, you have confidence in who you are as a person. Absolutely, because if you can meditate every day, that's the basic way to get started. And start paying attention to your dreams, keep a dream journal, and just notice what you remember when you wake up in the morning and write it down, and suddenly things will start to open up.
Let's go to Dominic in Tucson, Arizona, west of the Rockies. Dominic, thank you, sir. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, guys. So, Sean, I was very interested in what you're talking about, how people can see without using their eyes. The reason I ask this question is because all my life I was born visually impaired. And there's a lot of times that I can walk around with my eyes closed, and I don't have a problem. And I don't use echo sound or anything like that. But it's weird. I can walk into a dark room, and I can swear that there's light on in the room, and there's no light on in the room at all. And I've always had the ability. It's just that I don't know how to use it is what they've always told me, because I believe it is true. It's genetic, because my mother has it and my grandmother had it. But they tell me that I'm stronger, but I've never bothered to learn how to use it. But I can make things occur by thinking about it, like sometimes not in a good way too, though. But I'm just curious, like I'm 49, so I've been told, I'm not sure if you know what a curandero is, but in Spanish, it's usually in Mexico what they call our healers. And a lot of times they'll ask me to leave the room because they tell me that my energy is too strong, but it's too wild. And a lot of times I have dreams where I go to other dimensions, but I come back, but I can see everything perfectly. And I feel exhausted when I wake up in the morning. So
too much energy, but it's uncontrollable.
They say because I never learned how to control it.
How do you control it, Sean?
Meditation is a big part of that, because then you get to learn to moderate your emotional response, your concentration, what's going on in the mind. So it's about paying special attention in a silent space. That's basically what meditation is. It sounds like if you pursue formal training, maybe in Reiki or some sort of energy healing, through the training you'll receive the skills and the techniques you need to actually use your talent. You have something that comes very naturally to you. What a gift, what an opportunity. And I think if you just seek out some formal training, try it out, because you could be a fantastic healer. And now is a great time to get started.
Can these abilities be overused, where they just backfire on you?
Well, I think there's definitely the risk of exhaustion. That's happened to me. I've had to stop everything from time to time because of just being completely tired. And at some point in my telekinesis training, I had to stop because my heart center started aching a lot. And I don't know if it has to do with the heart chakra or the heart center or just the fact that the heart puts out a lot of electromagnetic energy. And maybe I was overusing it, because if you remember, there's the Nina Kulagina from Russia in the 1950s. There's a lot of video of her on YouTube doing telekinesis. Well, she eventually died of a heart attack. And I know of a man from Turkey named Fadi Mir. He was also very strong at telekinesis. And I believe he was in his late 20s or early 30s. It was just a few years ago. And he also died of a heart attack.
Does it drain them or something?
I wonder if it really taxes the physical body. And when you see videos of Nina Kulagina doing what she does and Fadi Mir, they were really straining a lot. They're really pushing. You can see it on their face. And scientists would weigh her body at the beginning of the day and at the end, and she would have lost pounds of weight by the end of the day through her straining and working so hard. And so I think because there is a connection between the physical body, the nervous system, the heart and the brain, and then the non-physical consciousness, it's really important to take care of the body, to not push it. And that's where it comes down to the ego, because after a while I had to ask myself, what am I trying to prove? And who am I trying to prove it to? Because it'll never be enough. You know, it's never enough.
It's never enough.
To satisfy everybody. And it can get dangerous if you try too hard.
We're taking calls with Sean McNamara, Joe in Monterey, California. Joseph, go ahead.
Thank you, George.
Sure thing.
Oh, by the way, that word that you were looking for was satsang, when people are gathered to make contact with truth or a spiritual practice. That's a satsang.
Spell it.
Also, when a person leaves the body, astral projection, they radiate a light. So people on the astral plane will know that this person is getting ready to leave their body to astral project. That's why certain people or beings, nasty ones also, especially, will gather around or do whatever they need to do according to who that person is. And there's an expression called a universe will gravitate around you, which is to imply that we are vortexes of reality that we create as soul, because that's how powerful we are. So with that, I'd like to ask you, what would a beginner, what advice, what can you tell a beginner to avoid? Because a lot of people want to know how to start, but they have these fears. So what are the things that they should avoid? You know, some of the dark stuff that's out there. And the spiritual practice is extremely important, as you put it, because without that stamina, spiritual stamina, we can falter and we can be swayed to the dark side. Also, some physical exercises. The adrenal glands are taxed very much when we do our psychic ability, so we have to be careful of that, and good nutrition is always important. Think of it as an athletic event. You're an athlete, a spiritual psychic athlete, and you should practice those things that are that relate to what you're doing and how you are doing it, and being very self-conscious, and yes, work with guides and angels. So what can we, as a beginner, what can a person do? What can they avoid doing? What are the things that they should avoid doing?
Well, it's funny that you ask, because what I always respond to that question with is, try not to pay attention to what people say on social media.
No. That's true.
There's a lot of bad information out there, and a lot of it is designed to make a person more scared and more fearful. So, I mean, I think there are things that to be careful about. There are people out there weaving stories and nightmares just for the fun of it or to confuse people. So don't pay too much attention to them, but what you said is really great. Be wholesome. Take care of yourself as a whole person. Take care of your mind and your body, and you know, use what you already have. If you have a particular religious belief that's helpful for you, look into the tradition. Call for your guides. Call for spirit in whatever way works for you. But definitely do your research. Look at the books that have been written, because the books are usually free of a lot of the garbage that you'll find online from strangers who you don't even know who they are or where they get their information. So the most important thing is, at the beginning, avoid bad information and take care of yourself. Be wholesome. Don't look for shortcuts. Don't just go for drugs or other chemicals that people say will get you there faster. I believe training the mind in a slow, consistent way, like a mature adult would do, I think that's really important. So don't go for the shortcuts. Don't fall for the untruths, for the fear-based stuff that people are putting out there for entertainment. But take it seriously and take it slowly. Be very patient. But find some techniques in different books and choose the ones that work best for you. The ones that inspire you the most are the ones that you're most likely to follow over the long term. And then just work at it.
Sean, the late Edgar Cayce literally died from his trances. He got weak and weak and weak. Do you have to be careful?
Absolutely. And that's part of the being wholesome part, where you check your body, value your health, maintain your health. There's this thing that some people take on, this martyr complex, like there's something good about sacrificing yourself to other people. But I think there might be an ego twist there. You're not going to help anyone if you're dead.
No, you can't do that for sure. We're going to come back and take some final phone calls with you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. We'll be back with final calls with Sean McNamara in just a moment, as we're talking about his psychic world. On our next Coast to Coast program, Pam Ostley joins us to talk about auras, and then later on, John Olson about hauntings on Coast to Coast, one of those classic programs in store. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. We're back with Sean McNamara, his website, mindpossible.com, linked up at coasttocoastam.com as well. It's an amazing ability that you've got, Sean. We haven't talked a lot about lucid dreaming. Do you still do a lot of that?
No, I stopped a while back of trying to make it happen on purpose, mostly because it did what it needed to do for me at that point in my life. I used it in conjunction with having out-of-body experiences, because you can launch from a lucid dream into an out-of-body experience. And at a certain point, I realized I think I've gotten everything I need. I'm no longer afraid of death. I've explored other realms. I've had contact with other beings. And I think I want to spend the rest of my life laying in bed with my wife, because often I would do my training in another room at night. And I realized all this non-physical consciousness stuff will be there when I'm dead for me to explore some more. For now, I think I just want to enjoy my physical life.
Yeah, no rush. No rush to get to the other side.
That's right. In a way, I think all these psychic experiences are like finding the answers at the back of the book. Then the learning stops. You know, I think there's so much value in just being a human being. And we learn through our limitations. We learn because we have a certain amount of time. We have a time limit while we're alive. And the real lessons are learned that way. That's where we learn love, compassion, connection, how to overcome and grow. That's really where it's at. So for me these days, exploring the other side and exploring psychic abilities, it's extra, but the main thing for me is just to be alive. But I also, of course, I love teaching these things to other people because it's inspiring. It does show people that they are more than just the limited body. But for me, I'm at a point where I really want to make the most of this physical, limited life.
Let's go back to the phones. First-time caller Bob in Ohio. Welcome, Bob. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, well, thank you for having me, and I always appreciate your wonderful radio show, George and Sean. It's a pleasure to be able to communicate with you at this exact moment.
Thank you.
I've had a couple out-of-body experiences that happened when I was 14 to 15 years old, and both were involuntary and spontaneous. And the first one was when I was having some tooth work done where I had to be knocked out to take out a tooth, laying flat on a bed, and the anesthesia came and I felt a rising sensation. And the next thing I knew, I was not looking up at the ceiling, but I was looking down at my body. And I could hear everything, I could see everything in perfect color, but I was not inside my body at all whatsoever. And then after a short amount of time, maybe 30 seconds to a minute, but I did see enough to then communicate. The next thing I knew, I woke up in a separate room, and my mom was there. I woke up, and I told her about it, and she started laughing at me. And I explained everything, and I said, you get the dentist here, and I'll tell you everything he did to me. And he verified it. And my mom just found it funny, and I thought that it was amazing. And the second time was an involuntary thing where I bumped my head, probably got a concussion and was knocked out.
Oh, geez.
But the next thing I knew, I was floating, my body was laying on the ground, and I was floating up at a ceiling point, looking down at my body and listening to my mom and stepdad having a conversation. That were there as well. So I'm just wondering if you could provide any insight about that. And one other thing, if you have time, I do know a lady who practiced a bunch of Mideastern practices, and she claimed that she had an out-of-body experience where she floated up above the earth, and that when she returned, it hurt, her body hurt extremely bad, and that she was, upon consulting experts, was told that she almost died from that.
Can you almost die from an OBE, Sean?
I don't think so, but then here's this example, but then who knows where these people are getting their information from. I've been very exhausted upon returning to my body. The exhaustion is common, but can you die from it? For me, it's absolutely safe.
And of course, in his case, he hit his head, almost had a concussion. Does that give you? I think that could give you an OBE, right?
Oh yeah. So what you've had is a trauma-induced OBE in that case, and there are many accounts of people they're being attacked, or they've been hurt, or they've been traumatized in some way. Women giving birth in the operating room have spontaneous OBEs. Marathon runners have reported leaving their body while they're running the marathon They float above the body because the body is just in a trance state moving, and their mind is rising up out of the body. So I'm not surprised to hear that you bonked your head and then left your body, or you were medicated at the dentist and then separated that way, because, of course, shamans for thousands of years have used medication to help them leave their bodies. There's so many ways to leave the body. And if you look at the literature for near-death experiences, you'll read them, these accounts, and they resemble what happened to you, that your mom laughed at you, that you got the dentist to verify what you saw. This happens a lot, especially in the operating room. That's why I suggest you check out near-death experience books and read those accounts, because you'll find out you are not alone.
Here's another text or tweet from Tom. What do you have for us, Tom?
Well, Sean, Janice in San Antonio, she writes, she says, can what happens in your dreams affect your waking life? And in parentheses, she puts, like, still falling. I don't know what that means exactly.
Yeah, I don't know what that means. But, you know, I think generally the emotional state that your dreams put you in, you know, we all have strong dreams and we wake up feeling a certain way. But we have a lingering feeling that does affect how we go about our day. And maybe it plants ideas about the future. We often get inspiring ideas or other things happen to us that shape the way our life goes forward. Now, a lot of people have premonitions in their dreams, and they should listen to them as long as it's safe to do so, because telepathy and precognition can occur in the dream state. So you might save your life or save someone else's life by paying attention to your dreams and the messages that they give you.
Next up, let's go to Roger in Chicago. Welcome to the show. Hey, Raj, go ahead.
I like George's idea about asking you if something can interfere with psychic ability. I would like to know if, like, a news article can interfere with remote viewing of a target.
If a news article can interfere?
Yeah, if you've heard something through a news article and then you view the target, if it can,
Can it interfere with something like that, John? I think it can. It can distort what you're thinking, can it?
Absolutely. And that's why you have to be careful with how you structure a remote viewing session. If you see an article or something ahead of time, that's called front loading, as if someone is giving you a clue, but it could be accurate or inaccurate. It could throw you off course. So the best way to engage in remote viewing is completely blind to the target, where someone just gives you a coordinate and you have no idea, no hints, no clues, no articles, nothing. And so you have to perceive directly from your consciousness with nothing getting in the way.
I used to think when I was younger that if you do out-of-body experiences, you might not be able to get back. Was that ever a concern of yours?
I was so excited to have them that I didn't worry about it. But I hear that question once in a while, and I think it's a fair question to ask. And the truth is, at least in my experience, it's hard to stay out for any length of time in an OBE. People think, maybe if I stay out too long, I won't be able to come back. It's really difficult to stay out for very long because we're so conditioned to be in the body.
It pulls us back fast, doesn't
it? Pulls us back, especially if we get scared while we're out or we see something we don't understand, we instantly come back to the body. So it's very safe that way.
Have you ever seen the cord in an OBE?
No, I keep trying to think back. Have I ever seen it? And I haven't. And I have this idea that the cord is a thought form based on a person's belief system, because people have talked about the cord forever, and many good authors have described seeing it themselves. The problem is some people report that the cord connects to their belly button. Others say it connects to their heart. Others say it connects to the back of their head. So that tells me that the cord is more of a subjective experience instead of an objective experience. So it's their mind translating the meaning of being separate from the body into the silver cord. So it's a symbolic thing, not an actual objective.
Have you heard if the cord severs, you die?
Yeah, I've heard that, right? I've heard that. But again, that might be a symbolic thing. It might not
be
literal.
John in Michigan. Take it away, John. Go ahead.
Good evening, George and Sean. Thank you.
Hi.
I've had kind of like a mixed bag. I've had a couple out-of-body experiences with a near-death, and then both of those, one was a bicycle crash, and the other was a rollover crash with my truck in a trailer. And then I've seen five UFOs that were fairly close, and went down to Brazil to John of God three times.
What did you think of him, John?
He says he doesn't heal, but God or Jesus heals. I thought he was the real deal. I really did. I know he's gotten into some issues now.
So he's human and made some human mistakes.
Exactly. But the first time there's about 300 to 400 people that are there in what they call current rooms, and they are praying continuously. And you walk through these people to meet John of God, and he gives you a prescription. And then you go back to your room and you stay in bed basically for 24 hours. And then you don't talk to anyone. They bring you food and everything. But I had a...
Did it work for you?
Well, it did and it didn't. The first time, nothing happened the first night because you had your spiritual surgery and then you just lay out and sleep and drink blessed water. The second night, I had my left knee was killing me, and I went down with my companion, and she gave me her carry-on bag and a pillow, and I just had my pajamas on with it up on the carry-on. And when I got in bed, when I sat down in the bed, I was going to read a book and listen to your show later on that night, and my back, all the vertebrae in my back just pop, 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 pop when I sat down. And then I had my knee up on the carry-on, and then it felt like a big cold drop of water hit my left knee. And then another one hit it. And I felt it, and it was cold, but it wasn't wet. And then this was around April 14th or 15th. You had the tax guy usually have on for fair tax or whatever that is.
Yeah.
So I turned, stopped reading, turned you off. I didn't want to listen to that. And then my left knee, there was a scrape on the inside of my kneecap. And it went from my center of the kneecap all the way out to the edge. And then scrape, scrape, scrape. And then a wider blade started, and it just went about half the way out. It didn't go all the way to the edge. And then the thinner blade would scrape, scrape, scrape. And that lasted an hour and 20 minutes.
All right, let's get Sean's reaction with the little time we have left. What do you think of prayer, first of all, Sean?
Well, I think prayer can be a powerful force. And it sounds in this man's case that there was a spiritual surgeon working on him from the other side.
But who sent the surgeon? John of God or God?
The whole situation, we don't have to say it was just John, but the whole situation created by him and the people in the room praying, the whole thing is put together in cooperation with beings on the other side. So there's a partnership there.
Sean, take a moment here and tell folks where they can get your books and what way they would find on your website.
Sure. Everything is available on my site. It's mindpossible.com. My books, audiobooks, online courses, some free videos. If you want to learn how to do spoon bending, I've got some free videos. You just follow along, and people are successful all the time doing that. You can contact me through that site, and eventually I'll start doing more live classes.
It's a remarkable feat that you've been able to do. And do you have any regrets?
That I didn't start when I was younger.
But you did. You were 7, weren't you?
Yeah, well, the fear of death started then. So maybe if I could do it without the fear of death, that'd be nice. But sometimes it takes a kick in the pants, right, to get us going.
It haunted you for years, didn't it?
It did.
All right. Well, I'm glad all is well. Then take care and good luck with your work, okay?
Thank you so much, George. I appreciate it.
Sean McNamara. The latest book is called Mind Sight. That's truly remarkable. How to See Without Your Eyes Open. They were covered up. It's just fascinating. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasor, Stephanie Smith, Chris Borrows, Tim Banal, George Knapp, and Ian Punnett, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.